Hearing Voices from NPR starts every new year listening to the past year.
2011.
Mixmaster Peter Beauchamp collects speeches, songs, and news events, then mashes them up into a one-hour program he calls Shortcuts.
2011.
I'm Barrett Golding. This is Shortcuts 2011 by Peter Beauchamp.
In this past year, my family and I have been inspired by the courage and hope we have seen in so many ways in Britain, in the Commonwealth, and around the world.
The earthquake occurring about 150 kilometers east of Sendai. I do want to mention that Japan is not the only place that is being affected here, but my goodness, it is now taking the brunt.
65 million of us along the East Coast are wondering about boarding up our windows and watching the sky.
We're at the western edge of the frontline insert, and there's some considerable force here of fighters. But they've stalled here. They haven't moved any further forward. In some areas around here, they've in fact moved backwards. So the resistance is still strong from the pro-Gaddafi forces. They're showing no signs of giving up just yet.
Fools. Trolls. Weak. Defeated. They allowed defeat to be an option. I will not.
His mother addressed the crowd. She tells them her son symbolized the beginning of the revolution and says she appreciates all the martyrs who've died this year.
With our armed forces deployed around the world, thousands of service families face Christmas without their loved ones at home. The bereaved and the lonely will find it especially hard. And as we all know, the world is going through difficult times.
There are a bunch of people basically gambling with all of our futures, and I don't agree with that. I don't consent to that.
Our politicians no longer represent us, the people.
So let me be the first to say that anything can be improved.
The people that the President of the United States gave orders to kill include Osama bin Laden.
They will die to protect me and my people.
A small team of Americans carried out the operation with extraordinary courage and capability. After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
You got a, is that, yeah, I thought you had a little, is that? Is that a shoe or did you injure yourself?
Nah, I broke my foot off in bin Laden's ass just before I shot him.
Although we are capable of great acts of kindness, history teaches us that we sometimes need saving from ourselves, from our recklessness or our greed. Indeed, sadly, it seems that it is tragedy that often draws out the most and the best from the human spirit.
It began in Tunisia. A market trader denied a permit by corrupt officialdom burnt himself to death. In weeks, the tumult toppled its first leader, President Ben Ali. What happened in Tunisia resonated across the Arab world for two reasons. It touched a common desire for dignity, freedom from petty officials. Also, in overthrowing a long-serving undemocratic leader, Tunisia showed it could be done.
But it wasn't to last. On Thursday morning, Gaddafi loyalists tried to break through the lines and escape. The burnt-out cars, evidence of their failure, and then the news that Muammar Gaddafi was one who tried to flee and was captured. It explained why the stubborn resistance.
When we captured Gaddafi, we did not hit him. Of course, there was a little hitting. We hit him a little in the beginning.
Well, I'll tell you this. I think this is the truth. This is the latest thing with Gaddafi, you know what I mean? It kind of makes me sick, you know, because I'm no fan of this man, don't get me wrong. But I do see that the U.S. government's putting him up there now. It's like you know, Khomeini's through, right? They let the hostages go, and it's like this Gaddafi, he's the new guy you should hate. You know what I mean?
This is a difficult story to tell, and that it's still an unfolding story. And that I think until there's a compelling narrative of why people have decided to peacefully occupy Zuccotti Park, I think it's very hard to communicate that story to everyone else.
The bankers called a meeting to the White House. They went one day. They was going to call on the president in a quiet and a sociable way. And the afternoon was sunny and the weather, it was fine. They counted all our money and no banker was left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the White House. No banker was left behind.
If he did that, we'd be in jail. All right, they call it a racket, a scam, and we'd be in jail. They got away with it, and they got bonuses to boot.
We need good jobs, and we need financial regulations to make sure that this never happens again.
Mayor Bloomberg said last week, he said there's going to be riots in the street. If we don't provide jobs right away, there are going to be riots. This is Mayor Bloomberg, the billionaire, talking.
We are in Zuccotti Square. We are here camping out in protest of the policies and the current economic environment.
Hallelujah! I can't speak for why the networks have not covered this. This is really the very first attempt since the crash of 08 to take a real stand, and it's been powerful. And I gotta believe that even though it may only number in the hundreds right now, this is going to grow, not only on Wall Street, but in communities all over America. And I would encourage people watching this show, there's a branch of Chase Bank in your town, and there's nothing preventing you from organizing a demonstration outside that branch with signs, with possibly even civil disobedience.
Today, I want to tell you three stories from my life. That's it. No big deal. Just three stories. The first story is about connecting the dots. I dropped out of Reed College after the first 6 months, but then stayed around as a drop-in for another 18 months or so before I really quit. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life and no idea how college was going to help me figure it out. And here I was, spending all the money my parents had saved their entire life. So I decided to drop out and trust that it would all work out okay. It was pretty scary at the time, but looking back, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. The minute I dropped out, I could stop taking the required classes that didn't interest me and begin dropping in on the ones that looked far more interesting. It wasn't all romantic. I didn't have a dorm room, so I slept on the floor in friends' rooms. I returned Coke bottles for the 5-cent deposits to buy food with. And I would walk the 7 miles across town every Sunday night to get one good meal a week at the Hare Krishna temple. I loved it. And much of what I stumbled into by following my curiosity and intuition turned out to be priceless later on. Let me give you one example. Reed College at that time offered perhaps the best calligraphy instruction in the country. Throughout the campus, every poster, every label on every drawer was beautifully hand calligraphed. Because I had dropped out and didn't have to take the normal classes, I decided to take a calligraphy class to learn how to do this. I learned about serif and sans serif typefaces, about varying the amount of space between different letter combinations, about what makes great typography great. It was beautiful, historical, artistically subtle in a way that science can't capture, and I found it fascinating. None of this had even a hope of any practical application in my life. But 10 years later, when we were designing the first Macintosh computer, it all came back to me. And we designed it all into the Mac. It was the first computer with beautiful typography. If I had never dropped in on that single course in college, the Mac would have never had multiple typefaces or proportionally spaced fonts. And since Windows just copied the Mac, it's likely that no personal computer would have them. If I had never dropped out, I would have never dropped in on that calligraphy class, and personal computers might not have the wonderful typography that they do. Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college. But it was very, very clear looking backwards 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart, even when it leads you off the well-worn path. And that will make all the difference.
If there is no such thing as time, you're already there and you're controlling this cycle. You say, man, look what we found here. Einstein or whoever you're talking to, Tesla, whoever you're talking to. Problems of the future can be solved by mankind because you create them. And you have to believe in the future and what we have to do. We progress. We always progress. We try to. So the Sumerian tablets, they say the same thing like Genesis said, that there were chariots of fire that came into the sky. These beings got out of them, and they walked like a man, but they had reptilian features. They had snake-like eyes, a tail, and scales, right? And they were here, and they made slaves out of the people. And where they landed in is what the Bible calls Garden of Eden. They were trying to inbreed with the people here. The women would die, the babies would abort. But after 2,000 years, they started taking. The babies started being born and living. And they had tails, they had a few reptilian features on them. They could phase shift from one dimension to another dimension. And the people who know say it's from the fourth dimension, it's the next dimension. Space is expanding. Their spirits coming from the center, right? We're going counterclockwise. There's supposed to be eight other universes going counterclockwise, and that's called super universe. You know, and love's always been the message. It just, circumstances happen, right? People freak out, just flat flip out, you know? Well, that's where Hitler came from. Hitler came from that way. He was an outspoken, charismatic yeller. And all these people said, hey, we use this guy. Look at all these people listening to this guy. You know what I mean? And so that's just one of the trips like that, you know? It still exists. And their bloodline goes back into Sumerian times. You know, they didn't call it reptilians, they didn't call it, but they did because they call it Satan, they call him the devil, and it's the same damn trip. It's a negative force coming in on a positive force because it's a third dimension, right? And for it to solidify or to crystallize, it has to have both elements, right? And you have to keep them in balance, or it will one of them will destroy the other.
You are hearing voices from 2011. A year and 1 hour of Shortcuts, produced by Peter Beauchamp.
I saw a hologram at the theme park. She looked as real as me through the wet fog. Then she melted down to her ankles, turned into a million watt candle. If I knew where she went, I would follow.
Carbon dioxide is portrayed as harmful, but there isn't even one study that can be produced that shows that carbon dioxide is a harmful gas. It is a harmless gas.
Bewilderment.
Carbon dioxide is perhaps 3% of the total atmosphere that's in the earth.
Bewilderment.
It is a harmless gas.
Washington has abused the Constitution.
Bewilderment.
We go back a decade ago with Woodrow Wilson.
Bewilderment.
We pointed out earlier that it is unclear as to where we stand with Pakistan. It is unclear where we stand with Afghanistan. We have our young men and women dying over there.
Terrorists who commit acts against United States citizens, people who are from foreign countries who do that, do not have any right on under our Constitution to Miranda rights.
They will die to protect me and my people.
N-E-E. W-T-T.
And then Gingrich.
Who will out of this for that?
G-I-N-G-R-I-C-H. N.
M.
N.
For
G,
about nothing. G.
R.
R.
I.
I.
C.
C.
H.
Gingrich. All right, we'll keep
Gingrich.
And as I said the first time?
Newt.
Wagwan, everything Irie. I is here with my main man. His name be Newt Gingrich. What policies was you famous for introducing?
Well, probably the most famous was welfare reform. We had a system that paid people to do nothing.
So how long do you think people should get welfare?
We set a pretty firm system that says that you can be on the system for about 4 years.
But ain't people just getting into it after 4 years?
Well, I mean, most people, we think, should actually go to work.
Do you think that people should get more welfare the longer they is on welfare?
No. We don't think that you earn seniority on welfare.
But surely the longer you is on welfare, it shows that you has got commitment. I mean, you wouldn't like it if you was in a job and didn't get a pay rise.
But our goal is to get you off of welfare, not to make it more desirable for you to stay on welfare.
Now, one thing I don't like about America is we got real bad drug policy. We got horrible drug policy. We got people in jail for getting high. For getting high.
If you take office as president, you're going to be presiding over a system where there are hundreds of thousands of people in jail for nonviolent crimes, for drug-related issues, many of them for marijuana possession. Would you pardon those nonviolent offenders
that
you have the power to?
Yeah, even the states are starting to do a bit of that because they can't build more prisons. I mean, I think we have more prisoners either first or second place and prisoners around the world.
So you're saying you would pardon all nonviolent offenders?
If somebody's in prison, in a federal prison for nonviolence, drug uses, never committed a hard crime, yes, they should be pardoned, they should be let out.
Legalize it, man. All drugs should be legal. All drugs should be legal. Why? People want to get high. That's right. People think about getting high right now. People are like, damn, how much longer in the show? People love to get high, man. You could get rid of all the illegal drugs in the world. People want to get high. You give it all the crack, all the herb, all the blow. You know what happened? People were just thinking new ways of getting high. That's right, guys would go in their basement and become scientists. Like, yo, check this out, check this out. You know, if you get a baby's bottle, right? Fill it up with a little gasoline and dead lima bean and suck it.
But yes, you have a right to do things that are very controversial. If not, you're going to end up with government that's going to tell us what we can eat and drink and whatever.
And the government always says drugs are illegal because they're bad for you and we're trying to protect society.
What you're inferring is, you know what? If we legalize heroin tomorrow, everybody's going to use heroin. How many people here would use heroin if it was legal? I bet nobody would put the hand, oh yeah, I need the government to take care of me. I don't want to use heroin, so I need these laws.
That's what Americans are looking for. I think we're getting all tangled up around an issue here about can you work with Democrats or can you work with Republicans. Yeah, we can all do that. But the fact of the matter is we better have a plan in place that Americans can get their hands around. And that's the reason my flat tax is the only one of all the folks, these good folks on the stage. It balances the budget in 2020. It does the things to the regulatory climate that has to happen. And I will tell you, it's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
Five.
Okay, so commerce, education, and
EPA?
EPA, there you go. No, okay.
Let's stop getting this.
Seriously?
Is EPA the one you were talking about? Or?
No, sir. We were talking about the agencies of government. EPA needs to be rebuilt.
But
there's
you
no doubt about
but
that.
But you can't name the third one?
More I ponder over this ghastly thing, the more convinced do I become that we are witnessing something greater than any war which has ever yet been waged in the history of mankind. I study this thing from day to day and night to night, and with me it is gradually becoming a deep conviction, a living and a burning faith that perhaps all unconsciously, we are witnessing that great Armageddon, that last battle of the world, that final upheaval of the primitive savagery and barbarism for which we sprang, and of which the old poets and mythologists used to speak in days gone by.
I will not believe that if I do something, then I have to follow a certain path, because it was written, and it was written for normal people, people who aren't special, people that don't have tiger blood, you know, Adonis DNA. Fools. Trolls. Weak. Defeated. They allowed defeat to be an option. I will not. I will not believe that if I do something, then I have to follow a certain path, because it was written, and it was written for normal people, people that aren't special, people that don't have tiger blood, you know, Adonis DNA. Fools. Trolls. Weak. Defeated. They allowed defeat to be an option. I will not. Fools. Trolls. Weak. Defeated. They allowed defeat to be an option. I will not. Fools. Trolls. Weak. Defeated. People that aren't special. People that don't have tiger blood and, you know, Adonis DNA. They allowed defeat to be an option. I will not.
It may be what everyone thinks of themselves as, but I consider myself to be an absolutely dead center, normal, average American. You'd think my experience growing up, going to school, getting married, having kids, buying a home, would make me perfect.
I was raised up believing I was somehow unique, like a snowflake, distinct among snowflakes, unique in each way you'd conceive. And now after some thinking, I'd say I'd rather be a functioning cog in some great machinery, serving something beyond me. But I don't know what that will be. I'll get back to you someday. Soon you will see.
You are hearing Voices with Shortcuts 2011, produced by Peter Beauchamp of WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, and All Mixed Up Productions. We heard some speeches from 2011 by Queen Elizabeth, Michael Moore, Steve Jobs, Chris Rock, Charlie Sheen, and Andy Rooney. And some 2011 songs by PJ Harvey, Ry Cooder, Bright Eyes, and this one by Fleet Foxes. Hearing Voices is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts. More Shortcuts 2011 coming up in a minute on Hearing Voices.
From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
You are hearing Voices with Shortcuts 2011 by Peter Beauchamp.
Not many people in this world are as lucky as I've been. When I was in high school, I had an English teacher who told me I was a good writer, so I set out to become a writer myself. I've made my living as a writer for 70 years now. Been pretty good.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
This half hour, a tribute to the people who left us last year. Especially musicians like Clarence Clemons, Jerry Lieber, Gil Scott-Heron, and Phoebe Snow.
You're making me laugh, 'cause your eyes, they light the night, they look right through me. La 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 la, you bashful boy, you're hiding something sweet, please give it.
I spell
R-U-N-E-Y.
R-U-N-E-Y.
You've done this before?
Yo, I mean, as many...
Have you ever done this before?
Yo, for real. I've done, I mean, I come... Many...
What is your language, your basic language? English?
Yo, for real.
So what language are you most comfortable in?
Yo, English. For real, I was from England.
Mm-hmm.
And how shall I introduce you?
That's your business, not mine.
Yo.
Look, I'm getting very close to the end of this.
Oh,
yeah, go ahead. Do what you have to do.
Yo, check it. I is here with none other than my main man, Andy Rooney. Total respect. And today we is chatting about the media. The media is well important, isn't it?
It is important. If a democracy is important, people have to know what's going on in the world. That's why the media is important.
Does you think the media has changed since you first got in it?
Does you think the media has changed? Do you think the media has changed?
Whatever. Does...
No, it's English. The English language would say, do you think the media has changed? Not, does you think the media has changed? Yes, I think the media has changed.
So what sort of things does you think the media should cover?
Do you think the media?
Do you think the media? I think it's an English-American thing, though, isn't it?
No. That's English. The English language is very clear. I have 50 books on the English language if you'd like to borrow one of them.
10th Avenue, freeze out. I have no idea what that means to this day. But it's important. stranded in the jungle trying to take in all the heat they were given. Alright, so the night is dark and the sidewalk's bright and lined with the light of the living. From a tenement window a transistor blast, turn around a corner, things got real quiet real fast. I walked into a 10th Avenue freeze out. And the important part, well, I'm all alone. I'm all alone. I'm on my own. I'm on my own. I'm on my own. And I can't go home until the next verse. Cause the change was made uptown and the big man joined the band. That's the whole thing right there. You know?
Jungle Land thing was the most intricate collaboration in the history of my life with Bruce Springsteen.
That was a very long sax solo, and Bruce was very particular on what he wanted it to be.
Literally going through every note of it.
Each line was scrutinized and checked out, and we could feel it and see, make sure it fit and this is right.
It's not easy to, you know, have somebody there going, yeah, hey, like this, like that, like this. His ability to focus and the patience to, if we were going after something, to spend hours and hours on it without it flustering him.
16 hours of standing in front of a microphone, working out every note, every line.
Every note of it. Going, this is it, play this note. I didn't even interrupt him.
We ended up like having it on like 8 tracks or 9 tracks. And Bruce just stood behind me, and there were these little switches on the console, you know, it was all so different then, you know, and he would hear what was on every track and just kind of rewrite the solo as it was going on.
When I finished it and listened to it and they put it together, it was like, wow.
We'll be right back.
When I was 17, I read a quote that went something like, "If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right." It made an impression on me, and since then, for the past 33 years, I've looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something.
Basically, I'm going to say this is the last song of you. I come off, my dad comes on. He does go to my head, stormy weather. He doesn't like that one, actually. Yeah, I just want to say again, thank you so much for coming out, really. See, thanks for turning up. It's all right.
Meet you downstairs and I'm buying your rolled up sleeves and your skull t-shirt. You said, "Why did you do it with him today?" He'll snuff me out like I was temporary. But you're my fella, my guy. Hail me, yo, Stella, and fly. By the time I'm out the door, you tear me down like Rambo. I cheated myself like I knew.
Evelyn Beebe and Jack LaLanne, huh? That's your Evelyn over there.
Yes.
Evelyn, where are you from? How old are you and are you married?
I'm from Libertyville, Illinois. I'm 20 years old and I'm single.
Well, you've got lots of time to get married. That's one thing you never want to rush into. When you meet a man you like, think it over very carefully. Take all day if necessary. You're Jack LaLanne?
I'm Jack LaLanne, Groucho.
It doesn't seem possible. Particularly since I've never met him. Where are you from, Jack?
I was born and raised in San Francisco.
Oh. Were you there during the earthquake?
I'm not that old, Groucho.
They had one last week.
Silvio.
Yes, Mickey.
How do you call your lover boy?
Come here, lover boy.
And if he doesn't answer?
Oh, lover boy.
And if he still doesn't answer?
I simply say, baby, oh, baby, my sweet baby, you're the one. Baby, oh, baby, my sweet baby.
Cool. Cats.
two of the great songwriters of rock and roll, you know, what Rodgers and Hammerstein are at Broadway, you'd have to say Lieber and Stoller are the 50s and into 60s rock and roll. And they had to be the foundation of the whole Brill Building scene. They had to be the, you know, the two titanic figures of that whole movement in the 50s and 60s in rock and roll. I mean, there's so many songs that they wrote. It's stunning when you think about their output. And, you know, it goes back to Hound Dog and Kansas City.
I'm going to Kansas City, Kansas City, here I come. I'm going to Kansas City, Kansas City, here I come. They got a crazy way of loving there, and I'm gonna get me some. They got a crazy way of loving there, and I'm gonna get me some.
Oh, I Smokey Joe's Cafe. Oh, I Smokey Joe's Cafe. Oh, I Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Becoming associated with Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller, who made the now historic Coaster Sessions.
We knew the king of the Turkish Empire was in the rhythm and blues business. And I used to say to him, man, he could have been the ambassador to England. What's he doing drinking slow gin and talking all that trash?
Yes, well, it was more fun.
It was more fun.
Yes, it was.
It always is.
More than anybody, I think Jerry and Mike were responsible for the great growth of Atlantic Records. They were responsible for more innovation, more hits. They really are probably just as important as anybody else in the history of our company.
I've been telling that to people for years.
I know. But it's true.
Very honest with you, I thought this was the worst. I said, this record will not hit.
It had nothing
to do with R&B. It was totally out of the way of all the things I'd recorded.
That's exactly how I thought.
I said, this record will not make it. I just said, well, I'm out of the church now, and this is not what I know the people will buy from me.
But you sang it with a lot of conviction. You felt it.
Yeah, I was sober that day, I mean.
It was the first time I ever put strings, really, on a rhythm and blues record or a rock record. Never had strings on.
Yeah.
I read a very funny piece where they talked about two Jews putting strings on a Mexican-style black record or something. Because I had these beats, you know, which were these kind of little Latin beats, no? A lot of that.
Jerry Wexler said, the strings were an abomination then and an abomination now.
Each time we recorded the Drifters, the string section got larger, and there was at least one or two more percussion players on it, all going boom, 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 boom.
That's what gave Phil the heart to pull out of the studio.
Yeah, I know. That's
he was with us then, you know.
Yes. That. He came.
He was our apprentice.
That's how I met Phil Spector.
Oh, that's right.
You don't have to worry, 'cause baby, there ain't no mountain.
You are hearing Voices with Shortcuts, 2011, by Peter Beauchamp.
At that time, Valerie and I were just wanted to bust out of ourselves.
So eager.
And just had to go somewhere and be somebody. Times inspire you.
And for love's sake, each mistake, oh, you forgave. And soon both of us learned to trust, not run away.
It was no time to play.
We build it up
and build it up
and build it up.
And now it's solid. Solid as a rock. That's what this love is.
That's what we've got. Oh.
Solid. Solid as a rock. And nothing's changed it. Woo.
The thrill is still. Somehow we managed, we had to stick together. You didn't bat an eye when I made you cry. We knew down the line we would make it better.
And for love's sake, each mistake.
I've been out here 30 years. I used to play with Wolf, Howlin' Wolf, for 23 and a half years until he died.
And see, we were so close to together till he wouldn't go nowhere without me, man. And I didn't feel right going nowhere without him. You know what I'm saying? Just like father and son. You know? Put it like it would, it was.
I was by him like Span was Muddy Waters. You know, other by, you understand what I'm talking about? Because we was just like that. I found out, I said, hey, this is the man's boy. This is me. Oh, so it's me. And that's what happened.
The music and the voice.
I can say this go for Jimmy Rogers when he's with Muddy. Go for Eddie Taylor when he's with Jimmy Reed. Jimmy Reed was Eddie Taylor. Eddie Taylor was Jimmy Reed. Hubert was Wolf. Wolf was Hubert. This is the way we had it. This is the way it was. There are some things that this guy did. Other words, I put the music to a lot of numbers. And one of the numbers went like this. You hear me? This number right here, which if all guitar players, and I guess a lot of musicians, a lot of singers try to do this number, which they do a nice job. Now it's called Howling for My Dog. For my darling. Then I hope Muddy Waters cut a lot of numbers, man. Rock me.
a hope of many people, you know, a hope of many guys record and do about David and so, but I'm proud of him, man. That gave me, that gave me something to live for. Really, I thought maybe when Wolf Pass and Muddy and all these people, man, the devil been it, you know what I mean? But man, ain't no way. In this business here, you love what you're doing. And blues gonna be here, man. It's gonna be here. It's here to stay.
I want to roll me just like you roll your dough. I'ma play some.
We almost through.
Why, don't you like to make records?
Yes. But I've been under strain lately. Unexplainable strain. You know, I'm nervous lately.
You were telling me about some songs that you did where your voice changes a lot.
My voice goes from weird changes when I was younger, but I did like a dojo friend. I told you this is the year I'm only in for the money. But don't forget, Frank, despite how happy I was in 61 and 62, I was committed to back-to-back mental institutions. I was raised with the fact that I was crazy, and I was raised that you're crazy, you'll always be crazy, and I never dug that. I can't be happy anymore when I sing. That's the main reason.
I did not become someone different that I did not want to be. But I'm new here. Will you show me around?
Shortcuts was produced by Peter Beauchamp in New York City.
No matter how far wrong you've gone, you can always turn around.
Only thing bothers me that he didn't show up. That was my problem. He didn't scare me, you know, throughout the craziness he talked about, you know, just the fight and guys he had beat up over the years. I said, yeah, but I ain't saying you listen, you know what? I ain't this one, I ain't that one, you know what I'm saying? You dealing with smoking Joe Frazier. And I'm coming to get you lunch.
Well, he couldn't have been nicer. He called me Mr. Morgan. I said, for Christ's sake, Elvis, call me Harry. Well, for about a week, he didn't call me anything. You know, I mean, he talked to me, but he didn't. Then he went back to calling me Mr. Morgan. I never met a more polite kid in my life. Couldn't have been nicer. I was his piano player on this.
Turn around, turn around, turn around. And you may come full circle. Happy New Year again.
Some of the people who passed last year: Jerry Lieber of the songwriting team Lieber and Stoller, Carl Gardner of the Coasters, Nicholas Ashford of Ashford and Simpson, Sylvia Robinson of Mickey and Sylvia, Joe Frazier, bluesman Hubert Sumlin, Wildman Fisher, Amy Winehouse, Clarence Clemens of Bruce Springsteen's band, Harry Morgan, Phoebe Snow, Jack LaLanne, and Gil Scott-Heron. Hearing Voices is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts. Shortcuts 2011 was produced by Peter Beauchamp of WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, WBAI New York City, and All Mixed Up Productions. They're at mixedup.com.
From NPR, this is hearingvoices.com.